Okay, well, I think it's 4 minutes past our starting time, so I think we should make a start. We do have a number of people already on the call, so firstly, can we have a list of those present and apologies, please?
Sure. Okay. From the CCNSO, we have Hugo Akiri, Martin Boyle, Becky Burr, Keith Davidson, Christy Spain, Stephen Deerhake, Leon Jukic, Holanda, Patricia Poblete, Nigel Roberts, Bill Semick, Dottie Sparks DeBlanc, and from liaisons we have Cheryl Langdon Orr. From staff support and special advisors we have Jack Ackerholz, Bart Boswinkel, Kim Davies, Christina Nordstrom, and Bernie Turcott. And we have apologies from Eberhard Lisse. Did somebody else join while I was doing the roll call?
It was Becky rejoining.
Okay.
Okay, and can I ask if everyone, when they're not speaking, can they please mute their phones, star 6 to mute and star 7 to unmute? I think that's right. But please do, because there's quite a number on the call, and so if we can keep interference to a minimum, that would be appreciated. Okay, no further apologies. Everyone present was recorded. Can we move on to the confirmation of the meeting for 23rd of August? I think it was a fairly small meeting by memory, and I don't think there was anything arising other than to continue our work on revocation, and I think everything's on the agenda for this call. Does anyone have any issues with the meeting notes from 23rd of August? If not, can we move on to item 4 on the agenda and revocation as a topic? And Bernie, what's our best way of handling this? Is it better to look at Becky, Nigel, Eberhardt's agreed text on misbehaviour first, or is it better to look at the document? I'll leave that to you anyway, Bernie.
I really think we're better off with the proposed text from yesterday. It'll be a minute for me to haul it and get it in front of everyone on the screen.
Okay, and just if anyone on the call doesn't know what I'm talking about, it was I circulated the text to the working group within the last 24 hours, and it is under the with an email with the subject line of substantial misbehaviour. So if you're not familiar, while we're waiting, you might find that email and have a quick read through. And while we're waiting for Bernie, I'll just say that record my thanks to Becky, Nigel, and Eberhardt for their ongoing efforts to find a way through. For many of you on this call who haven't been participating in recent weeks, this has been quite a significant stumbling block for us, and I thought we'd perhaps reached an impasse on our last call, but we have made good progress in the past week, and I think some give and take from all has led us to what appears to be quite a good compromise from those that have had strongly held opinions on this topic, and so hopefully we have something that the rest of the working group will consider reasonably appropriate. So let's test that, and over to you, Bernie.
Myself off of mute. Okay. Does everyone have the document notes 7 on the Adobe Connect room?
Yeah, it's showing up, Ben.
Okay. So maybe the best thing, given Becky is here, is to have her take us through this text, given she's the one who hammered it out with Nigel, and Nigel can throw in comments given he's here, but Eberhardt is not, I believe.
Okay. Kiki.
Okay. Basically, just to be clear, I think that although you referred to it as a compromise, in many ways I think this was more an exercise in sort of getting our thinking and our expression of what we were thinking aligned rather than sort of changing or compromising views. And I think so what we have here is really a refinement of sort of a more precise way of speaking about it. So obviously the substantial misbehavior, you have to look at it in two parts. First, what is misbehavior? We interpreted this in the context of the RFC 1591 to refer to conduct involving the failure of the designated manager to carry out or the manner in which the designated manager carries out the necessary responsibilities of that role. And the necessary responsibilities we have, you know, previously identified from the text in 1591.
This is Patricio. May I ask something about this paragraph?
Sure.
I think it's. I don't have any issue with the sentence at the beginning. The working group interprets misbehavior until the comma after carry out. I think that's perfect because it would be the conduct involving the failure of a designated manager to carry out. Okay, but. What comes after the comma, I think it could not be interpreted as misbehavior because it is just the manner in which the designated manager carries out the necessary responsibilities. That manner in which the manager carries out those responsibilities could be perfectly okay, so why would that be misbehavior? So I think that there's a need for an adjective like the inappropriate manner or the whatever manner. But as it stands, it's pretty neutral, so it couldn't be misbehavior.
I think we are missing a comma in here. But the point is, there are necessary responsibilities, and then the text also says that those necessary responsibilities have to be carried out in a manner that is fair, equitable, and honest. And so if you're carrying out the necessary responsibilities but being unfair or dishonest about it, the manner does become relevant. So I think if we said the failure of the designated manager to carry out the necessary responsibilities or the failure of the designated manager to carry out the necessary responsibilities in the manner required by 1591, which is to say fair, equitable, honest, and I can't remember what the third word was. Does that make sense?
I think it would be better because it would... somehow imply that the manner is not what it's expected. But as I say, just as it is now, I don't think that part of the sentence could be interpreted as misbehavior. I think what you said sounds better. It would need to be written in the way you said it.
Okay, so I agree, and we'll make that change. But by way of sort of general guidance and interpretation, this is sort of a standard that's roughly like misconduct in public office as opposed to the sort of more informal kind of misbehavior that you might talk about with respect to a child. We're trying to really align it with the sort of making sure that we're talking about conduct related to carrying out the responsibilities of the designated manager. So under that standard, a TLD manager who willfully neglects to carry out the duties of a TLD manager or in carrying out those duties willfully engages in misconduct to such a degree as to amount to an abuse of the trust placed in him by virtue of his or its designation without reasonable excuse or justification has misbehaved. So that's just the way in which we have interpreted misbehave. Now, misbehavior in this context, it is substantial misbehavior. So we can't stop there. We have to sort of look at what makes the conduct that we're talking about here, what would push it from one time into a substantial category, and that would be behavior as we've defined it, that's either egregious or persistent, and therefore we have sort of come up with this definition of substantial misbehavior as appearing to include the knowing repeated material failure to perform the necessary responsibilities of a designated manager in a manner that is equitable, just, and or honest. So that's the digging back into the specific words of 1591, or performing the necessary responsibilities of a designated manager in a manner that imposes serious harm or has substantial adverse effects on the local or global internet community. And then we go on to say, as we have said above, in this context, serious harm and substantial adverse effects should be evaluated in the context of the IANA contractor's continued focus on DNS security and civility as described above in 5213. And the point of this last sentence was to bring us full circle and make sure that we are reminding the reader that we have already interpreted the conduct here to hinge on the IANA contract manager's responsibilities related to preserving stability and security of the DNS, as opposed to some more abstract or unrelated to those responsibilities concept of harm or adverse effect.
Okay, there's a couple of hands up for questions. So firstly, Martin, then Nigel. So Martin, and welcome back, Martin. It's been a while since we've had you on a call.
Hi, Keith. Thanks. Hello? Am I coming over?
Yes, quite a bit of echo.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Okay. This might actually be something that in my extended absence you've gone over ad nauseam, but I haven't actually had a chance to read through all of the transcripts yet. But I notice under the first A that you make a specific and very clear reference to willful. Willfully neglects and willfully engages. And I wondered why you were excluding from that the incompetence that led to a breakdown in the service that was being provided.
Excellent question. And the answer to that is it's very intentional. Because the next section goes on to talk about persistent problems in the operation of the TLD. And so we think that there's a separate incompetence standard that doesn't turn on willfulness or intent, but, somebody, with the best of intentions could be completely incompetent. that would be handled by the section addressing persistent problems in the operation of the TLD, which is the next section in 1591. So you're absolutely correct.
Could you...
So 1591, section 5, after we talk about... Let me just pull this up. After we talk... I believe it's section 5, is that right, Bernie? Says... In the event of persistent problems in the operation of the TLD, the IANA functions contractor might need to make changes. I'm sorry, I had 1591 in front of me.
I'll pull it up for you in a sec, Becky.
I've got it here. It says, in cases where there are persistent problems with the proper operation of a domain, the delegation may be revoked and possibly delegated to another designated manager. And I think the precursor to this is 3.5 of RFC 1591, and the precursor to that is the opening line of 3.5, which states the designated manager must do a satisfactory job of operating the DNS for the domain. So did that answer your question, Martin?
I've had a bit of a problem trying to identify where this text is going into the existing draft. So I would like to, at some stage, look and find out what our wording is in the draft. Before agreeing to that, but nevertheless, I actually do have a residual concern in my mind that you can be just incompetent in the way that you are doing some of your duties as a CCTLD manager. Without actually doing it willfully, because you're incompetent, I think there is a sort of a double track here, and I just want to make sure that we have got in place that which covers it. Thanks.
Yeah, Martin, that was exactly what was bothering me. So you should. We'll get it to you in the context so that you can see, but I think, I was stuck on exactly the point you are, that there has to be some way of dealing with plain old incompetence, you know, even good-humored and, you know, unintentional incompetence, and I think that we have accomplished that.
Okay, so Nigel.
Thanks. I hope I'm already off mute.
Yes, you're working.
I'm going to try and resist the temptation because Becky and I have gone around this for a few days now, and I think we're both pretty happy with where we've achieved. And so most of what I've got is are minor niggles. First of all, however, I'll come back on Martin and I'll underline what Becky's just said. It's not reflected in the document, but there's a lot of authority and background information and looking at the definition of malfeasance and misfeasance as far as government and public officials is concerned. And clearly substantial misbehavior is a similar sort of thing. It's when somebody does the bad thing by virtue of his office that he shouldn't be doing. Mere incompetence is dealt with in section 5 on the objective standard as whether or not there are problems with the domain. The comment I put my hand up originally for is simply to remind ourselves really that we shouldn't be saying something is something. We should be saying appears to be, because after all we're an interpretation group. We're not the source of total authority. Somebody, let's say a tribunal in the future, might take a different view. we are coming up with conclusions, so we would, you know, we want to be fairly definite about what we think. But so I think I put something on the chat about just a minor suggested change there. It would be nice if that, by the way, if the the text reappeared. It's vanished off my screen because I was going to make a comment on it. Feeling a little.
Okay.
Are we able to do that? Get that note back up that was on a minute ago.
Hopefully, Bernie was driving that. So, Bernie, could we have the note back on screen? And while we're waiting for that to appear, and just as an administrative aside, I note that Bill Semich is on the call and maybe wasn't included in the original list of participants. And also, Eberhard has joined the call, despite his apology to say that he wasn't going to.
That's a different text.
Ah, here we go. Something else is happening.
Working on it.
Okay. Yeah, the second point I'm going to make is actually by virtue of a clarification, pointing out something. I don't think we've quite considered to think we've already addressed it, but to highlight it so everybody else on the call's got the opportunity to see what I've just seen. Now, I'm looking at points A, B, and C. And in A, we have got two things which parliamentary draftsmen would probably put as A, Roman I, and A, Roman II, or something like that. So that under A, neglecting to carry out the duties that the TLD manager should carry out, or when carrying out those duties, engages in a misconduct. And that's qualified by B, to such a degree as to amount an abuse of trust. If you simply string all those words together, you would think the qualifier B only applies to in carrying out those duties engaged in misconduct. But actually, I think, and I'll ask Becky to see whether she agrees with me on this, I think that the qualifier B applies to both parts of A. If everybody else agrees, I think we can leave it all exactly as is, but I just wanted to point that out, that in our own interpretations, we must be careful that we don't create scope for ambiguous interpretations by whoever reads it. Becky, do you agree with that?
I agree with that. I think it's A, B, and C qualifies everything.
But it's A1 qualified by B and A2 qualified by B. It's not just
right.
A2 qualified by B or A1.
Yeah.
I think it's actually there's a point A and a point B, both currently residing in point A, that need to be separated out. Is that essentially what you're saying, Nigel? That firstly, that the
we could do it that way too. Yes.
Yeah. The Wilson
but what I want to see is what's in A inside brackets and qualified by B and C.
Yep. Okay.
So I'd do that with A little I and A little two. But Bernie, it's your choice.
Okay.
I agree with you.
Okay, not hearing any disagreement. Okay, any further questions? Martin has his hand raised again. Nigel hasn't unraised his hand. So, Martin, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Keith.
Actually, Martin, we're getting quite a large amount of feedback, and I note that your speakers on your computer are on. Are you on the phone as well as the Adobe Connect microphone?
No, I'm using a headset.
The headset of from your computer?
From my computer, yeah. What I might do is, when I finish making my point, is to dial in separately, but also on my computer, and then I'll switch the other microphone off. The two bits that I'm sort of homing in on is the are the C and the second A. On the C, without reasonable excuse or justification, we've got somebody who's willfully neglecting, willfully engaging in misconduct. In what way is there going to be reasonable excuse or justification for a willful act? And my second point is under the second A, and there it says the knowing repeated material failure to perform the necessary responsibility of a designated manager, and this then overlaps with my concern about the incompetence, the unknowing, and the refusal to be told. So I'm just sort of raising a question for sort of an explanation of what the word knowing, or you know, why have we put the word knowing in that particular slot?
Becky.
So I think that in order to address your concern, Martin, we're going to have to get the text of the persistent problems, because this section, in terms of substantial, the way we analytically parse this was to say substantial misbehavior there are requirements that you do a job that is just, honest, equitable, and competent. And so substantial misbehavior, to the extent we're talking about the manner of carrying out the responsibility, addresses the just, honest, and equitable prongs of 1591, and that the persistent problems in the operation addresses the competence requirement. There is an intent or repeated requirement in with respect to just and honest and equitable, but in the analysis of the competence requirement, there's no intent knowing component. You can be just plain old clueless and incompetent, and if there are persistent problems, IANA has the right to revoke. But I think, so I hear you, I understand what your concern is, but until we get the language up there, I think you're not going to, you really need to be able to see that the way in which we sort of separate this out into two chunks. And incompetence doesn't arise in the substantial, that's not what substantial misbehavior is about, that's what persistent problems is about.
Okay, can I just say to Martin that we won't be resolving or finalising any of this text on this call alone, as is our practice. It will go through at least two readings, and because this is the real sort of nitty-gritty of our work, these particular aspects of revocation and so on, it may even take longer than that. So don't feel that you're agreeing to, or that you're being pushed into agreeing to anything tonight, and reading it in context with the more substantive document is quite critical as well. I see Nigel has his hand raised.
Just to add something, I agree entirely, 100%, well, as we've been working towards a synthesis for a week or two, that's unsurprising with Becky. But on Martin's point, he asked about why there's item C in there. Both A, B, and C are the elements of misfeasance in public office that were taken from the seminal case in English. So I can't give you the authority right now. It's in an email I sent to Becky about a week ago. and I don't have that immediately to hand. So what, although, as I say, it's not reflected for brevity in what by itself is a page worth of trying to analyze as a single two-word phrase, there is even more behind this, and I will gladly dig out the English Law Authority, which we've used as a model, and which I suspect will be persuasive authority in the US as well.
Oh, well, Martin...
In fact, you might even have it to hand if she's got my emails handy.
Martin has his hand re-raised, so Martin.
Thanks, Keith. And is this better?
Way better, thank you.
Okay, fine. Yeah, I think my sort of difficulty, hear what you say, Nigel, and obviously in the case of willful neglect and going through the process of substantial misbehaviour, there does need to be some option for appealing against it. It's just that the term of actually having a reasonable excuse to willfully neglect or willfully engage in misconduct is something that does give me a little bit of cause for concern that we should be putting this into a document that is going to be in the public domain. So that really was my concern on that word.
I'll dig that out for you, Martin, but I think you should perhaps, when I provide you with the authority, address your comments to the learned judge who's probably long dead. I think it's a 19th century case, but I'll dig it out for you and I'll send you the copy that I based my submission to Becky on. And we've modified it slightly to, instead of saying government official, we say TLD manager, but it's pretty analogous.
Okay, and was that your hand up again, Martin?
No, sorry, I clicked erroneously.
Okay, and
we keep doing that. Sorry, I've just done that.
And anything further to add, Becky?
Didn't we get to all the way through that? Does anybody else have questions?
Okay. Well, hopefully that gives everyone better context of the discussions that have resulted in the wordings and what the intent of the wording is. So anything more on this, on misbehaviour or substantial misbehaviour at this stage? Is everyone reasonably relaxed to the extent that they can be? And can we proceed to incorporate what will be a slightly amended text with some of the suggestions that have come through tonight into the main document? And I see Cheryl's indicating a tick for yes. And I'll assume that silence from others means that's okay. So, Bernie, shall we return then to the revocation document and other issues?
Well, we could, but we really, there are some bits of text which have to be amended after this one, which haven't been. So I think this was the core piece. We can go back to 3.2. Becky has proposed some other text which I haven't yet incorporated because I was waiting for this one. But I'm uncertain on the value of going over that text again without just doing a major rewrite to incorporate this stuff.
I agree, Bernie. I think that there were some changes that I put in to reflect, based on the transcript a couple of discussions ago, that we ought to circulate and get out before, in front of the group before we...
Okay, so if I'm hearing you both right, Bernie and Becky, you're suggesting that we really don't try and do anything more in terms of revocation until you've had another bash at the whole text. Is that what I'm hearing, Bernie?
Yes, that's what I'm proposing. We will have, I think Becky and I can sure to have a document out within the week, which will give everyone a week to go over it before the next meeting, and then we'll be working from the text of a full document with all the minor bits and pieces in the right places, and I think that's the best thing at this point.
Okay. I guess my only concern with that is that we only have two more calls between now and ICANN Toronto, and I'd like to keep us keep our momentum up on this, but I guess you're right, there's probably not much point in bashing up on other bits of text at this stage. So with that, unless anyone has any additional comments or inputs on the whole revocation topic, can we move further down the agenda? And I'm not hearing anything, so that we have two outstanding items on our agenda that have been carried over several times over recent weeks. Both mentioned in item five, so there's the response to the GAC on consent and the response to GAC on SIP, and I have been holding back on those, waiting for some re-engagement from a broader group of people on the working group, and I think I need to probably have a chat to Martin specifically about some aspects of one of these items in the next few days. So can we keep those as carry over items and resolve them on our next call? And Becky, I see you have your hand raised, so Becky.
Oh, I was just going to ask a question about the GAC, or ask for some input about the GAC comment on significantly interested parties, but I can do that offline, Keith.
Okay, cool. So if that's all right, we'll leave those as items to come up on our next call agenda. And that will take us to any other business. We have a meeting scheduled for 20 September at 2100 UTC, and then we have a further meeting 4th of October at 500 UTC. I guess in the interim as well, I think Bart Bart's not on the call, but we'll probably have to start working on our progress report to report our progress to the CCNSO and other groups. So that we can have those read at the next couple of meetings too. And then we as a matter of administration too, we are meeting, we're scheduled to meet on the Thursday afternoon on 18 October in Toronto. That, of course, will conflict with the public forum session of ICANN. And you know, we're starting to examine whether that Thursday afternoon will continue to be the most appropriate time for this working group to meet at ICANN, if it's going to go head-to-head with the public forum every time, it may not be particularly useful. We probably need to spend a few minutes in Toronto thinking about the timing of our meetings as well. So with that, unless there's any other business that anyone has, I think we should call a very early... Oh, I see Martin has his hand raised. Martin.
Yes, thanks, Keith. When you were talking about item five, and you saying that you wanted to have a discussion with me, was that to do with the change to the attachment that you sent to the GAC and that you agreed subsequently with Bill Semich?
Yes.
Okay, so I will wait for your call or exchange with you on that. The other comment that I had actually raised for any other business, which again I think is probably partly associated with the consent held over and the SIP held over, but I think is also relevant to the revocation discussion. The GAC have flagged to us now that they do consider the GAC principles for CCTLDs as being a policy document. That actually does have implications for our discussion on the revocation paper as well. And so perhaps for next time we need to start thinking about how we should be taking that into account.
Yep, and I've got a couple of points on that I'd like to just talk through with you as well. So I'll follow up with an email and see if we can find a time to have a phone conversation in the next, or early next week, your time, I think. Middle of
yeah, that'd be fine, Keith.
Okay, cool. If there's nothing else, I think we'll have finished our call exceptionally early today. So if nobody has anything else, there's quite a bit of follow-up for Bernie and Becky and myself. And with that, we'll call an end to the meeting. Thank you very much for your participation, and we'll talk to you all again in 2 weeks' time.
Thanks, Keith.
Thank you.
Thanks, Keith. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.